Good afternoon, and welcome to the podcast series, The Global Impact of Regenerative Agriculture, organized by the United Nations Development Program and Rodale Institute. My name is Jameson Urban. I'm your host, and I'm with UNDP's Nature for Development Program. This podcast series consists of three episodes and will introduce you to regenerative agriculture, explain how it can improve our existing global food system, and also how it can contribute to building climate resilience. For this episode, focusing on regenerative agriculture and the future of global food systems, I'm joined by Jeff Ketch, Chief Impact Officer at Rodale Institute. Welcome, Jeff, and thank you so much for joining this conversation today.
Thank you so much, Jamie. What an honor it is to be here and to be able to share more about our profound work with you and your audience.
Great. Well, let's get started. Let's start our conversation by setting some context for our listeners. What do you see as some of the challenges and weaknesses of our existing global food system? And how can regenerative agriculture improve this system?
Yeah, that's a great place to start, Jamie. I'm not sure if you're aware, but there was recent estimates that came out of the United Nations that are showing that if we continue to farm the way we farm on a global scale using conventional chemical agricultural methods, we have approximately 60 arable growing seasons left on planet Earth. Again, that's 60 years of farming if we continue to farm the way we farm. And that's not Rodale's science. That's actually coming from a group of scientists out of the UN. And it was an article published in Scientific American that was demonstrating this very urgent call to action.
That's a really alarming statistic, 60 growing seasons. Can you say a little bit more? What's driving that limitation of arable farm soil? Why is this happening?
Sure. Well, you know, I would argue that over the last 50 to 75 years, we've seen some major changes in the way that we produce food in the United States and certainly around the world. You know, coming out of post-World War II era was really the advent of chemical conventional agriculture, where we began to replace biology with chemistry. We've decided that as a agricultural system that we're going to put our trust in chemical farming. And that really began the sort of the march toward or the march away from our focus on soil health. And so we no longer are really measuring our success as farmers on how we're treating the soil. We've began to put our trust in the chemistry processes that are allowing us to maximize our yields. So really the focus has become on yields over the last 50 to 75 years as opposed to the health of the soil.
Wow. Okay. So I want to come back to that phrase that you said, that we're now replacing biology with chemistry. And so I'd like to ask you, how are soil health, human health, and nutrition and biodiversity and water security, these are often viewed in different silos, different realms, but it sounds like you think they might be part of the same package. Could you respond to how these might be interlinked?
Yeah, I would say that they're inextricably linked, that soil health and human health are directly linked. And just to give you an example of why that is, we have to back up and look at what's going on beneath our feet. You know, we've so divorced ourselves from this process of agriculture, where our food comes from and how it's produced. Most people don't realize that there's actually 10 billion microorganisms in one teaspoon of healthy soil. I'll say that again. There's actually 10 billion microorganisms in a teaspoon of healthy soil. So soil, when it's stewarded in a healthy way, is teeming with all kinds of biological life, microbiological life. And these tiny life forms are literally responsible for our ability to be alive and to be healthy, functioning humans. However, as we've began this onslaught of chemical agriculture, we have so depleted, so decimated our soils that it's causing cataclysmic human health epidemics. So to give you an example, in 1960, about 4% of the United States population would be diagnosed with a chronic disease at some point in their lifetime. Today, in 2020, the numbers are somewhere around 46% of our children under the age of 18 will face or have already faced a chronic illness in their lifetime. If you go fast forward to 1975, which ironically happens to be the year that glyphosate was patented, or Roundup, which is a broad spectrum antibiotic that we are now applying to the tune of 4.5 billion pounds annually just on US soils alone. In 1975, we saw a dramatic spike in chronic illness such as autoimmune conditions, ADD, ADHD, autism, cancers. We saw this major inflection point around that same time. So we've basically saw this direct correlation between the way in which we began to mistreat the soil with a major inflection point in human health epidemics. We believe at Rodale Institute and many other scientists around the world believe that it all has to do with our march away from soil health.
Mm. So you're really making the case that healthy soil is a precondition for healthy people, that when we stray from healthy soils, we start to have a lot of problems with health and nutrition.
Yeah, it's actually interesting. Our founder, J.I. Rodale, who's widely known as the pioneer of the organic food and farming movement in North America, he was not a farmer. J.I. Rodale, our founder, was an entrepreneur from New York City who wanted to be healthy. He wanted to improve his own human health, and having never farmed a day in his life, he purchased a farm back in the late 1930s out here in Pennsylvania, and he moved his family out from New York City because he wanted to raise them in open air and to be able to grow his own food. And when he purchased this farm, he wanted to get advice on agriculture, and so he went to the local land-grant university, which here in Pennsylvania is Penn State, and he was asking for advice on farming. And the experts there at the extension said to him, you know, J.I., it's really simple. If you want to be a farmer, you go out and you get these inputs, you bring them onto your farm, you apply them to your soil, and that's how you grow food. And that idea actually made sense to him because he had been an entrepreneur, he owned a manufacturing company, and he knew that if he wanted to produce the very best widgets, he needed to bring in the very best inputs into his factory. And so this idea of bringing chemicals onto the farm initially made sense to him. But then the more he pondered that, he said to himself, how is it possible? Can someone please explain to me what alchemy, what magic happens in the soil by bringing toxic chemicals and fertilizers into a biological system? And that, of course, made no sense to him the more he contemplated that. And so he wrote these words on a chalkboard, and they are our mission statement to this day. He said that healthy soil equals healthy food equals healthy people. That's our mission statement. And I think what J.I. Rodale was actually saying is that our job as farmers, it's not to produce food. I think what he was saying is that our job as farmers is to produce healthy people, that we as farmers are actually on the front lines of this human health epidemic, and that we really need to begin to see ourselves as the solution, not the problem.
Well, let me just dig a little bit more. This issue of, quote, hidden hunger has come up a few times in literature and in discussions. How do you see the issue of hidden hunger, especially as it applies? Well, first of all, what is it? How do you define it? And how does it apply globally?
Well, hidden hunger is actually this concept that while many people are getting enough calories in their diet in 2020, our food is actually getting less and less nutrient dense, which is leading to all kinds of health epidemics such as diabetes and obesity and heart disease. And we know this from our own research at the Rodale Institute. We've started what is now going to be a multi-year, multi-decade research study called the Vegetable Systems Trial, where we've set up the first study of its kind anywhere in the world that's growing organic and conventional vegetable crops in a side-by-side model, where we're going to be studying over the next, you know, hopefully many decades, looking at the long-term implications of those two systems of how to produce food. But one of the major things that we're going to be studying in the vegetable systems trial is looking at the nutrient density of those two systems. And we're only 3 years into this study, and we've already found some incredible data that is showing that there are clear differences in the phytonutrients, the micronutrients of food of these two agricultural systems based on how they were grown and based on the conditions of the soil, the health of the soil, or the lack thereof.
Fascinating. The next question, Jeff, that I'd like to ask has to do with the scalability of regenerative agriculture. There are competing narratives in the world that the entire world needs to pivot toward regenerative agriculture if we are to achieve our food security and health goals. And others say, actually, no, we need industrial food as it's currently produced in order to feed the world, given that we'll see probably somewhere between 9 and 10 billion people by 2050. And we know that by 2050, our food demand is probably going to go up by somewhere between 30 and 60%. How do you react to the claims that regenerative agriculture won't be able to provide food security for a growing globe?
Well, actually, our research here at the Rodale Institute, one of which is a study called the Farming Systems Trial, which is a 40-year study. It's the only study of its kind in the world that's been growing organic and conventional grain crops in a side-by-side method. And we've been calculating this data over four decades. And it's actually proved just the contrary of what you've just put forth. That actually, organic is outperforming the yields alone. Just the yields alone in these organic systems are outperforming conventional by up to 40%, especially in years of extreme weather where we're having these extreme rain events or drought. That these organic systems we've proven through science and through data that are just simply more resilient. And we're living at a time in human history where we can't produce food otherwise. Conventional agricultural systems can no longer sustain the yields that they once were because of these extreme weather patterns, because of the decline in soil health. And really the regenerative organic approach is our only way forward, I would argue, that this system can grow the food we need with the nutrients that the food was intended to have in a way that not only sustains the natural resources we depend, but it actually improves them over time. So really, we believe that regenerative agriculture is the future of agriculture, and it's a very exciting time.
So last thought on that. If this is true, and I fully believe you, having been a gardener for my entire life, and seeing how organic gardening and taking care of the soil provides big dividends, what's the biggest barrier that you see for transitioning our global food system into regenerative agriculture? If the answer is it's cheaper, it's better for the planet, what's the biggest barrier?
I would say it's three of them, and I'll summarize them quickly. The first one is an aging farming population. We now have six times the amount of farmers over the age of 65 than we do under the age of 35. So we need desperately to train tomorrow's farmers. And there's a lot of young people that are raising their hand and getting excited about creating a future in agriculture. Number two is technical assistance. We need more expertise and handholding of farmers across the globe, literally holding their hand and showing them how, step by step, how to adopt these regenerative practices. And then third and finally, it's markets and financial institutions. We need banking systems to change their lending policies, to create opportunities for organic farmers to have access to loans and capital and help them with transitioning income. And also, we need long-term markets. We need major food companies offering long-term healthy contracts and making commitments to these farmers so that they can be secure about their future as they walk through this transition.
Great. And to that, I might add that we might need to rethink our global subsidies or national subsidies at global scales and get some of the private sector finance groups that are looking for impact investments to start to take an interest.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes to all of those things.
Great. Well, Jeff, thank you so much for sharing your expertise and your experience with our podcast listeners. And to all of our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. We invite you to explore the next episode in this podcast series, which will focus on how regenerative agriculture can build climate resilience.
It's been a real honor to be here. Thank you so much for having me, Jamie.
Thanks, Jeff.